Welcome to week six of section. We deviated from our standard section time of Tuesday afternoons this lovely Sunday morning. Thank you for everyone that joined me today. Seriously, round of applause. That's pretty big effort. I almost didn't even make it up in time. It was okay. So I know that all of you have just made it to the quiz. First of all, welcome to the flip side of that. Secondly, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about the quiz. We'll talk about how you're doing in the class. You'll be fine. I have your quizzes for you at the end of here. So if you guys want to take a look at it, totally fine. So quickly, before we begin, the agenda for today is as follows. As you can see, we're basically rapid firing through a whole bunch of data structures really, really, really quickly. And so as such, it won't be super interactive today. It'll just be me kind of shouting things at you. And if I confuse you, if I'm going too fast, let me know. They're just various data structures, and as part of your PSET for this upcoming week, you'll be asked to implement one of them, perhaps two of them, in your PSET. Okay, so I'm just going to start with some announcements. We'll go over stacks and queues, more in depth than what we did before the quiz. We'll go over linked list again, once again, more in depth than what we had before the quiz. And then we'll talk about hash tables, trees, and tries, which are all pretty necessary for your PSET. And then we'll go over some helpful tips for PSET 5. Okay, so quiz zero. The average was a 58%. It was very low, and so you guys all did very, very well in accordance with that. Pretty much, rule of thumb is if you're within like a standard deviation of the mean, especially since we're in a less comfy section, you're totally fine. You're on track. Life is good. I know it's scary to think that I got like a 40% on this quiz. I'm gonna fail this class. I promise you, you're not gonna fail the class. You're totally fine. For those of you who got over the mean, impressive, like seriously, well done. I have them with me. Feel free to come get them at the end of section. Let me know if you have any issues, questions with them. If we added up your score wrong, let us know. Okay. So PSET 5, this is a really weird week for Yale in the sense that our PSET is due Wednesday at noon, including the late day. So it's actually theoretically due Tuesday at noon. Probably no one finished at Tuesday at noon. That's totally fine. We're going to have office hours tonight as well as Monday night. And all of the sections this week will actually be turned into workshops. So feel free to pop in any section you want, and there'll be kind of mini PSET workshops for help on that. So as such, this is the only section where we're teaching material. All of the other sections will be focusing exclusively on help for the PSET. Yeah.
Where are office hours?
Office hours tonight. Ooh, good question. I think office hours tonight are in Teal or a Commons. If you check online CS50 and you go to office hours, there should be a schedule that tells you where all of them are. I know either tonight or tomorrow is Teal, and I think we may have Commons for the other night. I'm not sure. Good question. Check on CS50. Cool. Any questions regarding the schedule for the next like 3 days? I promise you guys, like David said, this is the top of the hill. You guys are almost there. Just 3 more days, get there, and then we'll all come down. We'll all have a nice CS-free break. We'll come back. We'll dive into web programming and development, things that are very fun compared to some of the other PSETs. And it'll be chill, and we'll have lots of fun. We'll have more candy. Sorry for candy. I forgot candy. It was a rough morning. So yeah, you guys are almost there, and I'm really proud of you guys. Okay. So, stacks. Who loved the question about Jack and his clothing on the quiz? No one? Okay, that's fine. So essentially, as you can picture, Jack, this guy here, loves to take the clothing out of the top of the stack. And he puts it back onto the stack after he's done. So in this way, he never seems to be getting to the bottom of the stack in his clothing. So this kind of describes the basic data structure of how a stack is implemented. Sorry. Essentially, think of a stack as any stack of objects where you put things onto the top, and then you pop them out from the top. So LIFO is the acronym we like to use, last in, first out. And so last in to the top of the stack is the first one that comes out. And so the two terms we like to associate with that are called push and pop, when you push something onto the stack and you pop it back up. And so I guess this is kind of an abstract concept. For those of you who want to see like an actual implementation of this in the real world, how many of you have written an essay maybe like an hour before it was due, and you accidentally deleted a huge chunk of it, like accidentally? And then what control do we use to put it back? Control Z, yeah? Control Z. So the amount of times that Control Z has saved my life, has saved my ass, Every time, that's implemented through a stack. Essentially, all the information that's on your Word document, it gets pushed and popped at will. And so essentially, whenever you delete anything, you pop it back up. And then if you need it back on, you push it, which is what Control Z does. And so real world function of how, you know, a simple data structure can help with your everyday life. Okay, so a struct is the way that we actually create a stack. We type define struct, and then we call it stack at the bottom. And within the stack, we have two parameters that we're going to essentially manipulate. So we have char star strings capacity. All that it is doing is creating an array that we can store whatever we want, which we can determine capacity. Capacity is just the max amount of items we can put into this array. Int size is the counter that keeps track of how many items are currently in the stack. So then we can keep track of A, both how large the actual stack is, and B, how much of that stack we've filled, because we don't want to overflow over what our capacity is. So for example, this lovely question was on your quiz. Essentially, how do we push onto the top of a stack? Pretty simple. If you look at it, we'll walk through this. If s.size, remember, whenever you want to access any parameter within a struct, you do the name of the parameter dot the parameter, or sorry, the name of the struct dot parameter. In this case, s is the name of our stack. We want to access the size of it, so we do s.size. So as long as the size is not equal to capacity, or as long as it's less than capacity, either would work here. You want to access the inside of your stack, so s.strings, and you're going to put that new number that you want to insert into there. Let's just say we want to insert int n onto the stack. We can do s.strings brackets s.size equals n, because size is where we currently are in the stack. If we're going to push it on, we just access wherever the size is, the current fullness of the stack, and we push the int n onto it. And then we want to make sure that we're also incrementing size at the end, so we can keep track of we've added an extra thing to the stack. Now we have a greater size. Does this here make sense to everybody, how logically it works? It's kind of quick.
Can you go over the s.strings, s.size?
Sure. So what does s.size currently give us?
The current size.
Exactly. So the current index that our size is at, right? And so we want to put the new integer that we want to insert into s.size, right? Does that make sense? Because s.strings, all that is the name of the array. All it is accessing the array within our struct. And so if we want to place n into that index, we can just access it using brackets s.size. Cool. All right, pop. I pseudocoded out for you guys, but similar concept. Does that make sense? If the size is greater than 0, then you know that you want to take something outright. Because if the size is not greater than 0, then you have nothing in the stack. So you only want to execute this code. You can only pop if there is something to pop. So if the size is greater than 0, we minus the size, we decrement the size, and then return whatever is inside of it, right? Because by popping, we want to access whatever is stored in the index of the top of the stack. Everyone make sense? If I made you guys write this out, would you guys be able to write it out? Okay, you guys can play around with it. No worries if you don't get it. We don't have time to code it out today because we got a lot of data structures to go through. But essentially, pseudocode, very, very similar to push. Just follow along the logic. Make sure you're accessing all the features of your struct correctly. Yeah.
Will these slides and this whole thing be up?
Always.
Today-ish?
Yep.
So.
Yep. It'll get, I'm going to try to put this up an hour after. I'll email David. David will try to put it up an hour after this. Yeah. Okay, so then we move into this other lovely data structure called a queue. As you guys can see here, a queue for the British amongst us, all it is a line. So contrary to what you think a stack is, a queue is exactly what logically you think it is. It's held by the rules of FIFO, which is first in, first out. If you're the first one in the line, you're the first one that comes out of the line. So what we like to call this is dequeuing and enqueuing. If we want to add something to our queue, we enqueue. If we want to dequeue or take something away, we dequeue. So same sense that we're kind of creating a fixed sized array or fixed size elements that we can store certain things, but we can also change where we're placing parameters inside of them based on what type of like functionality we want. So stacks, we wanted the last one in to be the first one out. Queues, we want the first thing in to be the first thing out. Okay, so the struct type define, as you guys can see, it's a little bit different from what the stack was, because not only do we have to keep track of where the size currently is, we also want to keep track of the head as well as where we currently are. So I think it's easier if I draw this up. So let's imagine. We've got a queue, right? So let's say the head is right here. The head of the line. Let's just say that's currently there. And we want to insert something into the queue. I'm going to call size essentially is the same thing as tail, the end of wherever your queue is. Let's just say size is like right here. So how does one feasibly insert something into a queue? What index do we want to place wherever we want to insert into? If this is the beginning of your queue and this is the end of it or the size of it, where do we want to add the next object? Exactly, right? You want to add it depending on how you've written it. Either this is blank or that is blank. So you want to add it probably here, right? Because if the size is, if these are all full, you want to add it right here, right? And so that's, well, very, very simple, not quite always correct, because the main difference between a queue and a stack is that a queue can actually be manipulated so that the head changes depending on where you want the beginning of your queue to start. And as a result, your tail is also going to change, right? And so take a look at this code right now. As you guys were also asked to write out on the quiz and queue, maybe we'll talk through why the answer was what it was. I couldn't quite fit this line on one, but essentially this piece of code should be on one line. Spend like 30 seconds, take a look, and see why this is the way that it is. Very, very similar struct, very, very similar structure as the previous stack, except for perhaps one line of code. And that one line of code determines the functionality, and it really differentiates a queue from a stack. Anyone want to take a stab at explaining why you've got this complicated thing in here? We see the return of our wonderful friend Modulus. As you guys will soon come to recognize in programming, almost any time you need something to wrap around anything, Modulus is going to be the way to do it. So knowing that, does anyone want to try explaining that line of code? Yeah, all answers are accepted and welcome.
Oh, are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Wait, sorry.
Okay. So let's walk through this code, right? So when you're trying to add something onto a queue, in the lovely case that the head happens to be right here, it's very easy for us to just go to the end and insert something, right? But the whole point of a queue is that the head can actually dynamically change depending on where we want the start of our queue to be. And as such, the tail is also going to change. And so imagine that this was not the queue, but rather, this was the queue. Let's say the head is right here. Let's say our queue looked like this. if we wanted to shift where the beginning of the line is, let's say we shifted head this way and size is here. Now we want to add something to this cube. But as you guys can see, it's not so simple as to just add whatever is after the size, because then we run out of bounds of our actual array. Where we want to really add is here. That's the beauty of a queue, is that to us visually, it looks like the line goes like this, but when stored in a data structure, think of it as like a cycle. It kind of wraps around to the front. The same way that a line can also wrap around depending on wherever you want the beginning of the line to be. And so if we take a look down here, let's say we wanted to create a function called nq. We wanted to add int n into that q. If q.size q, we'll call that our data structure. If our q.size does not equal to capacity, or if it's less than capacity, q.strings is the array within our q. We're going to set that equal to q.heads, which is right here, plus q.size modulus by the capacity, which wrap us back around here. So in this example, index of head is 1, right? The index of size is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. So we can do 1 plus 4 modulus by our capacity, which is 5. What does that give us? What is the index that comes out of this? 0, which happens to be right here, right? And so we want to be able to insert into right here. And so this equation here kind of just works with any numbers depending on where your head and your size are. If you know what those things are, you know exactly where you want to insert whatever is after your queue. Does that make sense to everybody? I know, kind of a brain teaser, especially since this came in the aftermath of your quiz, but hopefully everyone now can understand why this solution or this function is the way that it is. Anyone a bit unclear on that? Okay. And so now if we wanted to dequeue, this is where our head would be shifting, right? Because if we were to dequeue, no longer, we don't take off the end of the queue. We want to take off the head, right? So as a result, head is going to change. And that is why when you enqueue, you got to keep track of where your head and your size are to be able to insert into the correct position. And so when you dequeue, I also pseudocode it out. Feel free to, if you want to attempt coding this out. You want to move the head, right? If I wanted to dequeue, I would move the head over. This would be the head. And then size of the, our current size would subtract because we no longer have 4 elements in the array. We only have 3. And then we want to return whatever was stored inside of the head, because we want to take this value out. So very similar to the stack, just you're taking from a different place and you have to reassign your pointer to a different place as a result. Logically, everyone follow? Great. Okay, so we're going to talk a bit more in depth about linked lists because they'll be very, very valuable for you in the course of this week's PSETs. Linked lists, as you guys can remember, all they are nodes that are nodes of certain values of both a value and a pointer that are linked together by those pointers. And so the struct on how we create a node here is we have int n, which is whatever the value we're going to store, or string n, or whatever you want to call it, char star n. Struct node star, which is the pointer that you want to have in each node, next. You're going to have that pointer point towards next. You'll have the head of a linked list that's going to point to the rest of the values, so on and so forth, until you eventually reach the end. And this last node is just going to not have a pointer. It's going to point to null. And that's when you know you've hit the end of your linked list, is when your last pointer doesn't point to anything. So we're going to go a bit more in depth regarding how one would possibly search a linked list, right? Remember, what are some of the drawbacks of a linked list versus an array? Regarding searches, in array you can binary search, but why can't you do that in a linked list?
Because like they're all connected, but you don't quite know where in space or where in memory.
Yeah, exactly. So remember, the brilliance of an array was the fact that we had random access memory, where if I wanted the value from index 6, I could just say index 6, give me that value. And that's because arrays are stored in a contiguous space of memory in one place, whereas kind of linked lists are randomly interspersed all around. And the only way you can find one is through a pointer that tells you the address of where that next node is. And so as a result, the only way to search through a linked list is linear search. Because I don't exactly know where like the 12th value in the linked list is, I have to traverse the entirety of the linked list one by one, from the head to the first node, to the second node, to the third node, all the way down until I finally get to where that node I'm looking for is. And so in this sense, search on a linked list is always n log, it's always n, it's always in linear time. And so the code in which we would implement this, and this is a bit new for you guys since you guys haven't really talked about or ever seen pointers and how to search through pointers. So we'll walk through this very, very slowly. So bool search, right? Let's imagine we want to create a function called search that returns true if you found a value inside the linked list and it returns false otherwise. Node star list is currently just the pointer to the first item in your linked list. Int n is the value that you're searching for in that list. So node star pointer equals list. That means we're setting and creating a pointer to that first node inside of the list. Everyone with me? So if we were to go back here, I would have initialized a pointer that points to the head of whatever that list is. And then once you get down here, while pointer does not equal null. So that is the loop in which we are going to be subsequently traversing the rest of our list. Because what happens when pointer equals null? We know that we have, exactly. So we know that we've reached the end of the list, right? If you go back here, each node should be pointing to another node and so on and so forth until you hit eventually the tail of your linked list, which has a pointer that doesn't point anywhere other than null. And so you basically know that your list is still there up until pointer does not equal null. Because once it equals null, you know that there's no more stuff. So that is the loop in which we're going to have the actual search. And if the pointer, do you see that kind of arrow function there? So if pointer points to n, if the pointer at n equals n. So that means that if the pointer that you're searching for on the n of each node is actually equal to the value you're looking for, then you want to return true. So basically, if you're at a node that has the value that you're looking for, you know that you've been able to successfully search. Otherwise, you want to set your pointer to the next node. That is what that line here is doing. Pointer equals pointer next. Everyone see how that's working? And essentially, you're going to just traverse the entirety of the list, resetting your pointer each time until you eventually hit the end of the node, and then you are at the end of the list, and you know that there are no more nodes to search through. And then you can return false. Because you know that, oh, well, if I've been able to search through the entirety of the list, if in this example, if I wanted to look for the value of 10, and I started at the head, and I searched all the way down, and I eventually got to this, which is a pointer that points to null, I know that, crap, I guess 10 isn't in this list, because I couldn't find it, and I'm at the end of the list. And in which case, you know, I'm going to return false. So let that soak in for a little bit. This will be pretty important for your PSET. The logic of it is very simple. Perhaps syntactically, just implementing it, you guys want to make sure that you understand. Cool. Okay. So how we would be inserting nodes, right, into a list. Because remember, what are one of the benefits of having a linked list versus an array in terms of storage?
Dynamic, so it's easier to...
Exactly. So it's dynamic, which means that it can expand and shrink depending on the user's needs. And so, in this sense, we don't need to waste unnecessary memory, because if I like know I need to have, I don't know, sorry, other way around, if I don't know how many values I want to store, it doesn't make sense for me to create an array, right? Because if I want to store 10 values and I create an array of 1,000, that's a lot of wasted memory allotted. That's why we want to use a linked list to be able to dynamically change or shrink our size. And so that makes insertion a bit more complicated, since we can't randomly access elements the way that we would if an array. In an array, if I want to insert an element into like the 7th index, I just can insert it into the 7th index. On a linked list, doesn't quite work as easily. And so, if we wanted to insert the 1 here in the linked list, visually it's very easy to see, we just want to insert it right there, right at the beginning of the list, right? Right after head. But the way in which we have to reassign the pointers is a bit convoluted, or logically it makes sense, but you want to make sure that you have it completely down, because the last thing you want is to reassign a pointer the way that we're doing here if you decrement, if you dereference the pointer from head to 1. Then all of a sudden the rest of your linked list is lost, right? Because you haven't actually created a temporary anything that's pointed to the 2. If you reassign the pointer, then the rest of your list is totally lost. So you want to be very, very careful here to first assign the pointer from whatever you want to insert into wherever you want. And then you can dereference the rest of your list. So this applies for wherever you're trying to insert into. If you want to insert at the head, if you want to insert here, if you want to insert at the end, well, at the end, I guess you would just have no pointer, but you want to make sure that you don't lose the rest of your list. You always want to make sure your new node is pointing towards whatever you want to insert it into. And then you can add the chaining on. Everyone clear? This is going to be one of the real issues, like one of the most major issues you're going to have on your pset, is that you're going to try to create a linked list and insert things, but then just lose the rest of your linked list. And you're going to be like, I don't know why this is happening. And it's a pain to go through and search all of your pointers. And I guarantee you on this pset, writing and drawing these nodes out will be very, very helpful. So you can completely keep track of where all your pointers are, what's going wrong, where like all your nodes are, what you need to do to access or insert or delete or any of them. Everyone good with that? Cool. So, if we wanted to look at the code, oh, I don't know if we can see this. Okay, so at the top, all it is a function named insert, where we want to insert int n into the linked list. We're going to walk through this. It's a lot of code, a lot of new syntax. We'll be okay. So, up at the top, whenever we want to create anything, what do we need to do? Especially if we want it to not be stored on the stack, but in the heap. We want a malloc, right? So we're going to create a pointer. Node pointer new equals malloc, the size of a node, because we want that node to be created. We want the amount of memory that a node takes up to be allotted for the creation of the new node. And then we're going to check to see if new equals equals null. Remember what we said, whenever you malloc, what must you always do? You must always check to see whether or not that is null. For example, if your operating system was completely full, if you had no more memory at all, and you tried to malloc, it would return null for you. And so if you try to use it when it was pointing to null, you're not going to be able to access that information. And so as such, we wanted to make sure that whenever you're mallocing, you're always checking to see if that memory given to you is null. And if it's not, then we can move on with the rest of our code. So we're going to initialize the new node. We're going to do new n equals n. And then we're going to set new, the pointer on new, to null. Because that's, right now, we don't want anything for it to point to. We have no idea where it's going to point to. And then if we want to insert it at the head, then we can reassign the pointer to the head. Does everyone see, follow the logic of where that's happening? All we're doing is creating a new node, setting the pointer to null, and then reassigning it to the head if we know we want to insert it at the head. And then the head is going to point towards that new node. Everyone okay with that? So it's a two-step process. You got to first assign whatever you're creating, set that pointer to the reference, and then you can kind of dereference the first pointer and point it towards the new node. Wherever you want to insert it, that logic is going to hold true. It's kind of like assigning temporary variables. Remember, you got to make sure that you don't lose track of, if you're swapping, you want to make sure that you have a temporary variable that kind of like keeps track of where that thing is stored so that you don't lose anything, any value in the course of like messing around with it. Okay, so code will be here. You guys take a look after a section. It will be there. So how does this differ if we wanted to insert into the middle or the end? Does anyone have an idea of what's the pseudocode of, or as like the logical reference that we would take if we wanted to insert in the middle? So if we want to insert at the head, all we do is create a new node. We set the pointer of that new node to whatever the head was, and then we set the head to the new node, right? If we wanted to insert in the middle of the list, what would we have to do?
It would still be a similar process of like assigning
Exactly. So exactly the same process, except you have to locate where exactly you want that new pointer to go into, right? So if I wanted to insert into like the middle of linked list, let's say that's our linked list. If we want to insert it right here, we're going to create a new node, right? We're going to malloc, we're going to create a new node. We're going to assign the pointer of this node here, right? But the problem that differs from where the head is that we knew exactly where the head is. It was right at the first, right? But here, we got to keep track of where we're inserting into. If we're inserting our node here, we got to make sure that this, the one previous to this node, is the one that reassigns the pointer. So then you have to kind of keep track of two things. You have to keep track of where this node currently is inserted into. You also have to keep track of where the previous node that you're looking at was also there. Everyone good with that? OK. How about inserting into the end? If I wanted to add it here, if I wanted to add a new node to the end of a list, how might I go about doing that? Exactly. So this one currently is pointed to null. And so I guess in this sense, it's very easy to add to the end of a list, right? All you have to do is set that equal to null. And then, boom, right there. Very easy, very simple. Very similar to the head. But logically, you want to make sure that the steps you take towards doing any of this, you're following along. It's very easy to, when the middle of your code, get caught up on, oh, I have so many pointers. I don't know where anything's pointing to. I don't even know which node I'm on. What's going on? Relax, calm down, take a deep breath, draw out your linked list. If you say, I know where exactly I need to insert this into, and I know exactly how to reassign my pointers, much, much easier to picture out. Much, much easier to not get lost in the bugs of your code. Everyone okay with that? Okay. So I guess a concept that we haven't really talked about before now, and I guess you probably won't encounter much yet, it's kind of an advanced concept, is that we actually have a data structure called a doubly linked list. So as you guys can see, all we're doing is creating an extra value, an extra pointer on each of our nodes that also points to the previous node. So not only do we have our nodes point to the next one, they also point to the previous one. I'm going to ignore these two right now. So then you have a chain that can move both ways. And then it's a bit easier to logically follow along. Like here, instead of keeping track of, oh, I have to know that this node is the one that I have to reassign, I can just go here and just pull the previous. Then I know exactly where that is. And then you don't have to traverse the entirety of the linked list. It's a bit easier. But as such, you have doubly the amount of pointers. That's double the amount of memory. It's a lot of pointers to keep track of. It's a bit more complex, but it's a bit more user-friendly depending on what you're trying to accomplish. So this type of data structure totally exists. And the struct for it is very, very simple, except all you're having is instead of just a pointer to next, you also have a pointer to previous. That's all the difference was. Everyone good with that? Cool. All right. So now I'm going to really spend probably like 15 to 20 minutes or the bulk of the rest of the time in section talking about hash tables. How many of you guys have read PSET 5 spec? All right, good. That's higher than the 50% of normally. It's OK. So as you guys will see, your challenge in PSET 5 will be to implement a dictionary where you load over 140,000 words that we give you and spell check it against all of the text. We'll give you random pieces of literature. We'll give you like the Odyssey. We'll give you the Iliad. We'll give you Austin Powers. And your challenge will be to spell check every single word in all of those dictionaries, essentially, with our spell checker. And so there's a few parts of creating this PSET. First, you want to be able to actually load all the words into your dictionary, and then you want to be able to spell check all of them. And so as such, you're going to require a data structure that can do this fast and efficiently and dynamically. So I suppose the easiest way to do this, you could probably create an array, right? The easiest way of storage is you can create an array of 140,000 words and just place them all there and then traverse them by binary search or by selection, or not, sorry, that's sorting. You can sort them and then traverse them by binary search or just linear search and just find all the words, right? But that takes a huge amount of memory and it's not very efficient. And so we're going to start talking about ways of making our running time more efficient, and our goal is to get constant time, where it's almost like a raise. You have instantaneous access. If I wanted to search for anything, I want to be able to just boom, find it exactly, and pull it out. And so a structure in which we'll be coming very close to be able to access constant time, this holy grail in programming of constant time, is called a hash table. And so David previously mentioned the hash table a little bit in lecture, but we're going to really dive in deep this week on our PSET regarding how a hash table works. So the way that a hash table works, for example, if I wanted to store a bunch of words in the English language, right? I could theoretically put banana, apple, kiwi, mango, pear, and cantaloupe all in just an array, right? They could all fit in. It'd be fine. It'd be kind of a pain to search through and access. But the easier way of doing this is that we can create actually a structure called a hash table where we run all of our keys through a hash function, an equation that turns them all into some sort of a value that then we can store onto essentially an array of linked list. And so here, if we wanted to store English words, we could potentially just, I don't know, like turn all the first letters into some sort of a number. And so, for example, if I wanted A to be synonymous with apple, or with the index of 0, and B to be synonymous with 1, we can have, you know, 26 entries that can just store all of the letters of the alphabet that words start with, and then we can have apple at the index of 0. We can have banana at the index of 1, cantaloupe at the index of 2, and so on and so forth. And thus, if I wanted to search my hash table and access apple, I know apple starts with an A, and I know exactly that it must be in the hash table at index 0 because of the function I've previously assigned. So, I don't know, you as a programmer, you'll be charged with trying to thoughtfully think of good equations to be able to spread out all of your values in a way that you can easily access it later on with like an equation that you yourself know. So in this sense, if I wanted to go to mango, I know, it starts with M. It must be at the index of 12. I don't have to search through anything. I know exactly. I can just go to the index of 12 and pull that up. Everyone clear on how a hash table's function works? It's kind of just a more complex array. That's all it is. Okay. So I guess we run into this issue of what happens if you have multiple things that give you the same index, right? So say our function, all it did was take that first letter and turn that into a respective 0 through 25 index. That's totally fine if you only have one of each. But the second you start having more, you're going to have what's called a collision, right? So if I try to insert berry into a hash table that already has banana on it, what's going to happen when you try to insert that? Bad things, right? Because banana already exists within the index that you want to store it in. Barry kind of is like, what do I do? I don't know where to go. How do I resolve this? And so you guys will kind of see we do this tricky thing where we can kind of actually create linked lists in our arrays. And so the easiest way to think about this, all a hash table is an array of linked lists. And so in that sense, you have this beautiful array with pointers. And then each pointer in that value, in that index, can actually point to other things. And so you have like all these separate chains coming off of one big array. And so here, if I wanted to insert berry, I know, I'm going to input it through my hash function. I'm going to end up with the index of 1. And then I'm going to be able to have just a smaller subset of this giant, 140,000 word dictionary. And then I can just look through 1/26th of that. And so then I can just insert berry either before or after banana, in this case, after, right? And so you're going to want to insert this node after banana. And so you're going to insert it at the tail of that linked list. I'm going to go back to this previous slide so you guys can kind of see how a hash function works. So hash function is this equation that you're running kind of like your input through to get whatever index you want to assign it towards. And so in this example, all we wanted to do was take the first letter, turn that into an index, then we can store that in our hash function. All we're doing here is we're converting the first letter. So key bracket 0 is just the first letter of whatever string we're passing in. We're converting that to upper, and we're subtracting by uppercase A. So all that is doing is giving us a number in which we can hash our values onto. And then we're going to return hash modulus size. Be very, very careful, because theoretically, here, your hash value could be infinite, right? it could just go on and on and on. It could be some like really, really large value, but because your hash table that you've created only has 26 indexes, you want to make sure you're modulusing so that you don't run, it's the same thing as your queue, so that you don't run off the bottom of your hash function. You want to wrap it back around. The same way in Visionaire, when you had like a very, very large letter, you didn't want that to just run off the end. Same thing here, you want to make sure it doesn't run off the end by wrapping it around to the top of the table. So this is just a very simple hash function. All of that did was take the first letter of whatever our input was and turn that into an index that we can put into our hash table. Yeah, and so as I said before, the way that we resolve collisions in our hash tables are having what we call chaining. So if you try to insert multiple words that start with the same thing, you're gonna have one hash value, right? Avocado and apple, if you run it through our hash function, are gonna give you the same number, the number of zero. And so the way we resolve that is that we can actually kind of link them together via linked lists. And so in this sense, you guys can see kind of how data structures that we've been studying previously, like arrays and linked lists, kind of can come together into one. And then you can create far more efficient data structures that can handle larger amounts of data that dynamically resize depending on your needs. Everyone clear? Everyone kind of clear on what happens here? If I wanted to insert, what's a fruit that starts with, I don't know, B, other than berry, banana?
Blackberry.
Blackberry. Where does blackberry go here? Well, we actually haven't sorted this yet. But theoretically, where would blackberry, if we wanted to have this in alphabetical order, where should blackberry go?
After.
Exactly. After here, right? But since it's very difficult to reorder, I guess it's up to you guys. You guys can totally implement whatever you want. The more efficient way of doing this, perhaps, would be to sort your linked list into alphabetical order. And so when you're inserting things, you want to be sure to insert them into alphabetical order so that then when you're trying to search them, you don't have to traverse everything, right? You know exactly where it is, and it's easier. But if you kind of have things interspersed randomly, you're still going to have to traverse it anyways, right? And so if I wanted to just insert blackberry here, and then I wanted to search for it, I know, oh, blackberry must start with the index of 1. So I know instantaneously just search at 1. And then I can kind of traverse the linked list until I get to blackberry. And then, yeah.
If we're trying to create, like, I guess, because like this is a very simple like hash function, right?
Yeah.
And if we wanted to do like multiple layers of that, so
yeah.
Like, okay, like we want to separate into like all the alphabetical letters,
yeah.
And then again to like another set,
yep.
Of alphabetical letters within that.
Yep.
Like, are we putting like a hash table within a hash table, or like function within a function, or is that?
So your hash function, your hash table can be as large as you want it to, right? So in this sense, I thought it was very easy, very simple for me to just sort based on letters of the first word. And so there's only 26 options, right? I can only get 26 options from 0 to 25 because they can only start from A to Z, right? But if you wanted to add perhaps more complexity or faster runtime to your hash table, you can do all sorts of things. You can make your own equation that gives you more distribution in your words, then when you search, it's going to be faster. It's totally up to you guys how you want to implement that. Think of it as just buckets. If I wanted to have 26 buckets, I'm going to sort things into those buckets. But if I'm going to have a bunch of stuff in each bucket, right? So if you want to make it faster and more efficient, let me have 100 buckets. But then you have to figure out a way to sort things so that they're in the proper bucket they should be in. But then when you actually want to look at that bucket, it's a lot faster because there's less stuff in each bucket, right? And so, yeah, that's actually the trick for you guys in PSET 5 is that you'll be challenged to just create whatever is the most efficient function you can think of to be able to store and check these values. Totally up to you guys, however you want to do it. But that's a really good point. That's the kind of logic you want to start thinking about is, well, why don't I make more buckets? And then I have to search less things. And then maybe I have a different hash function. Yeah, there's a lot of ways to do this PSET. Some are faster than others. I'm totally going to just see how fast, what's the fastest you guys will be able to get your functions to work. Yeah. OK, everyone good on chaining and hash tables? It's actually like a very simple concept if you think about it. All it is separating whatever your inputs are into buckets, sorting them, and then searching the lists that they're associated with. Cool. All right, now we have a different sort of data structure that's called a tree. We'll go on and talk about tries, which are distinctly different, but in the same category. Essentially, all a tree is instead of order or organizing data in the linear way that a hash table does, you know, it's got, you know, a top and a bottom, and then you kind of link off of it. A tree has a top, which you call the root, and then it has leaves all around it. And so all you have here is just a top node that points to other nodes, that points to more nodes, and so on and so forth. And so you kind of just have splitting branches. It's just a different way of organizing data. And the way that, because we call it a tree, you guys can just, it's just modeled out to look like a tree. That's why we call it trees. Hash table looks like a table. A tree just looks like a tree. All it is a separate way of organizing nodes depending on what your needs are. So you have a root, and then you have leaves. The way that we can particularly think about it is a binary tree. A binary tree is just a specific type of a tree that where each node only points to, at max, two other nodes. And so here you have distinct symmetry in your tree that makes it easier to kind of look at what values you are, because then you have always a left or a right. There's never like a left third from the left or a fourth from the left. It's just you have a left and a right, and you can search either of those two. And so why is this useful? The way that this is useful is if you're looking to search through values, right? Rather than implementing binary search in an array, if you wanted to be able to insert nodes and take away nodes at will and also preserve the search capacities of binary search. So in this way, we're kind of tricking. Remember when we said linked lists can't binary search? We're kind of creating a data structure that tricks that into working. And so because linked lists are linear, they only link one after the other, we can kind of have different sort of pointers that point to different nodes that can help us with search. And so here, if I wanted to have a binary search tree, I know that my middle is 55. I'm going to just create that as my middle, as my root. And then I'm going to have values span off of it. So here, if I'm going to search for the value of 66, I can start at 55. Is 66 greater than 55? Yes, it is. So I know I must search in the right pointer of this tree. I go to 77. Okay, is 66 less than or greater than 77? It's less than, so you know, oh, that has to be the left node. And so here we're kind of preserving all of the great things about arrays, so like dynamic resizing of objects, being able to insert and insert and delete at will without having to worry about the fixed amount of space. We still preserve all of those wonderful things while also being able to preserve the log n search time of binary search that we were only previously able to get of arrays. Cool data structure, kind of complex to implement. The node, as you can see, all it is, the struct of the node is that you have a left and a right pointer. That's all it is. So rather than just having a next or a previous, you have a left or a right. And then you can kind of link them together however you so choose. Okay. We're actually going to just take a few minutes. So we're going to go back here. As I said previously, I kind of explained the logic behind how we would search through this. We're going to try pseudocoding this out to see if we can kind of apply the same logic of binary search to a different type of data structure. If you guys want to take like a couple minutes to just think about this. All right, this next, I'm going to actually just give you the, no, we'll talk about the pseudocode first. So does anyone want to give a stab at what the first thing you want to do when you're starting out searching is? If we're looking for the value of 66, what's the first thing you want to do if we want to binary search this tree?
You want to like look right and look left and see if the value's greater than or
Yeah, exactly. So you're going to look at your root, right? There's lots of ways you can call it your parent node, people say. I like to say root because it's like the root of the tree. You're going to look at your root node, and you're going to see, is 66 greater than or less than 55, right? And if it's greater than, well, it is greater than, where do we want to look? Where do we want to search now, right? We want to search the right half of this tree. So we have, conveniently, a pointer that points to the right. And so then we can go to, we can set our new root to be 77, right? We can just go to wherever the pointer was pointing. Oh, here we're starting at 77. And we can just do this recursively again and again, right? In this way, you kind of have a function. You have a way of searching that you can just repeat over and over and over, depending on where you want to do, where you want to look, until you eventually get to the value that you're searching for. Make sense? I'm about to show you the actual code, and it's a lot of code. No need to freak out. We'll talk through it. Actually, no. That was just pseudocode. OK, that was just the pseudocode, which is a bit complex, but it's totally fine. Everyone following along here, if the root is null, return false, right? Because that means you don't even have anything there. If root n is the value, so if it happens to be the one you're looking at, then you're going to return true because you know you found it. But if the value is less than root of n, you're going to search the left child, or the left leaf, whatever you want to call it. And if the value is greater than root, you're going to search the right tree. Then you just run the function through search again. And if root is null, that means you've reached the end, right? That means you have no more leaves to search. Then you know, oh, I guess it's not in here, because if I've looked through the whole thing and it's not here, just might not be here. Does that make sense to everybody? So it's like binary search preserving the capabilities of linked lists. Cool. And so the second type of data structure you guys can try implementing on your PSET, you only have to choose one method, but perhaps an alternative method to the hash table is what we call a try. All a try is a specific type of tree that has values that go to other values. So instead of having a binary tree in the sense that only one thing can point to two, you can have one thing point to many, many things. You essentially have arrays inside of which you store pointers that point to other arrays. So the node of how we would define a try is we want to have a Boolean is word, right? So the node is Boolean, like true or false. First of all, at the head of that array, is this a word? Secondly, you want to have pointers to whatever the rest of them are. Bit complex, a bit abstract, but I will explain what that all means. So here, right, if you have at the top, if you have an array declared already, a node, where you have a Boolean value stored at the front that tells you, is this a word, is this not a word? And then you have the rest of your array that actually stores all the possibilities of what it could be. So for example, like at the top, you have the first thing that says true or false, yes or no, this is a word. And then you have 0 through 26 of the letters that you can store. If I wanted to search here for bat, I go to the top and I look for B. I find B in my array, and so I know, oh, OK, is B a word? B is not a word, so thus I must keep searching. I go from B, and I look to the pointer that B points towards, and I see another array of information, the same structure that we had before. And here, oh, the next letter in B at bat is A. So we look in that array, we find the A-th value, and then we look to see, oh, hey, is that a word? Is B a word? It is not a word. You got to keep looking. And so then we look to where the pointer of A points, and it points to another array in which we have more values stored. And eventually we get to BAT, which is a word. And so the next time you look, you're going to have that check of, yes, this Boolean function is true. And so in the sense, we're kind of having a tree with arrays. So then you can have, essentially, you can kind of search down. Rather than hashing a function and assigning values by linked list, you can just implement a try that searches downwards. Really, really complicated stuff. Not easy to think about because I'm like spitting so many data structures out at you, but does everyone kind of understand how the logic of this works? Okay, cool. So yeah, so B, A, T, and then you're going to search the next time and you're going to see, oh, hey, it's true. Thus, I know this must be a word. Same thing for zoo. So here's the thing, right now, if we wanted to search for zoo, right now, currently zoo is not a word in our dictionary, because as you guys can see, the first place that we have a Boolean return true is at the end of zoom, right? We have Z-O-O-M. And so here, we don't actually have the word zoo in our dictionary because this checkbox is not checked. So the computer doesn't know that zoo is a word, because the way that we've stored it, only zoom here actually has a Boolean value that's been turned true. So if we wanted to insert the word zoo into our dictionary, how would we go about doing that? What do we have to do to make sure our computer knows that Z-O-O is a word and not the first word is Z-O-O-M? Exactly. We want to make sure that this here, that Boolean value is checked off, that it's true. Z-O-O, then we're going to check that. So we know exactly, hey, zoo is a word. I'm going to tell the computer that it's a word so that when the computer checks it, knows that zoo is a word. Because remember, like, all these data structures, it's very easy for us to say, oh, bat's a word, zoo's a word, zoom's a word. But when you're building it, the computer has no idea. And so you have to tell it exactly. At what point is this a word? At what point is it not a word? And at what point do I need to search things? And at what point do I need to go next? Everyone clear of that? Cool. And so then comes the problem of how would we go about inserting something that's actually not there. So let's just say we want to insert the word bath into our try. As you guys can see, like, currently all we have now is B-A-T, and this new data structure there had a pointer that pointed to null. Because we assumed that, there's no words after bat, why do we need to keep having things after that T? But the problem arises if we do want to have a word that comes after the T's. If we want to have bath, you're going to want an H, right? And so the way we're going to do that is we're going to create a separate node. We're going to allot whatever amount of memory for this new array, and we're going to reassign pointers. We're going to assign the H, first of all, this null we're going to get rid of. We're going to have the H point downwards. If we see an H, we want it to go to somewhere else. And here, we can then check off, yes, if we hit an H after the T, then we know that this is a word. The Boolean is going to return true. Everyone clear on how that happened? Okay. So essentially, all of these data structures that we've gone over today, I've gone over them really, really quickly and not in too much detail, and that's okay. Once you start messing with it, you'll be keeping track of where all the pointers are, what's going on in your data structures, et cetera. They'll be very useful, and it's up to you guys to totally figure out how you want to implement things. And so, PSET 5 is misspellings. As I said before, you're going to, once again, download source code from us. There's going to be three main things you'll be downloading. You'll download dictionaries, keys, and text. All those things are either dictionaries of words that we want you to check or texts of information that we want you to spell check. And so the dictionaries we give you are going to give you actual words that we want you to store somehow in a way that's more efficient than an array. And then the texts are going to be what we're asking you to spell check to make sure all of the words there are real, are real words. And so the three blocks of programs that we'll give you are called dictionary.c, dictionary.h, and speller.c. And so all dictionary.c does is what you're asked to implement. It loads words, it spell checks them, and it makes sure that everything is inserted properly. Dictionary.h is just a library file that declares all those functions. And speller.c, we're going to give you, you don't need to modify any of it. All speller.c does is take that, loads it, checks the speed of it, tests the benchmark of like how quickly you're able to do things. And so speller, just don't mess with it, but make sure you understand what it's doing. We use a function called getRUsage that tests the performance of your spell checker. All it does is basically test the time of everything in your dictionary. So make sure you understand it, be careful to not mess with it, or else things will not run properly. And the bulk of this challenge is for you guys to really modify dictionary.c. We're going to give you 140,000 words in a dictionary, right? We're going to give you a text file that has those words. And we want you to be able to organize them into a hash table or a try. Because when we ask you to spell check, imagine if you're spell checking like Homer's Odyssey. It's like this huge, huge text. Imagine if every single word you had to look through an array of 140,000 values, that would take forever for your machine to run. That is why we want to organize our data into more efficient data structures, such as a hash table or a try. And then you guys can kind of, when you search, access things more easily and more quickly. And so be careful to resolve collisions. You're gonna get a bunch of words of A that start with A. You're gonna get a bunch of words that start with B. Up to you guys how you want to resolve it. Perhaps there's more efficient hash functions than just the first letter of something. And so that's up to you guys to kind of do whatever you want. Maybe you want to add all the letters together. Maybe you want to like do weird things to account the number of letters, whatever. Up to you guys how you want to do that. If you want to do a hash table, if you want to try a try, totally up to you. I will warn you ahead of time that the try is typically a bit more difficult just because there's a lot more pointers to keep track of. But totally up to you guys. It's far more efficient in most instances. You want to really be able to keep track of all of your pointers. Like, do the same thing that I was doing here. When you're trying to insert values into a hash table or delete, make sure that you're really keeping track of where everything is. Because it's really easy for, if I'm trying to insert like the word Andy, let's just say that's a real word, the word Andy into like a giant list of A words. If I just happen to reassign a pointer wrong, oops, there goes the entirety rest of my linked list. Now the only word I have is Andy, and now all of the other words in the dictionary have been lost. And so you want to make sure you keep track of all of your pointers, or else you're going to get huge problems in your code. Draw things out carefully, step by step. It makes it a lot easier to think of. And lastly, you want to be able to test your performance of your program on the big board. If you guys take a look at CS50 right now, we have what's called the big board. It is the score sheet of the fastest spell checking times across all of CS50 right now. I think the top like 10 times out of like the top 10, I think 8 of them are staff. We really want you guys to beat us, right? All of us, we're trying to implement the fastest code as possible. We want you guys to try to challenge us and implement faster than all of us can. And so this is really the first time that we're asking you guys to do a PSET that you can really do in whatever method you want, right? All we say, this is more akin to like a real life solution, right? I say, hey, I need you to do this. Build a program that does this for me. Do it however you want. I just know that I want it fast. That's your challenge for this week. You guys, we're gonna give you a task, we're gonna give you a challenge, and then you guys, it's up to you guys to completely just figure out what's the quickest and most efficient way to implement this. Yeah.
If we wanted to like research like faster ways to do hash tables online, can we do that and like cite someone else's code?
Yeah, totally fine. So if you guys read the spec, there's a line in the spec that says, you guys are totally free to research hash functions on what are some of the quicker hash functions to run things through, as long as you cite that code. So some people have already figured out fast ways of doing spell checkers, fast ways of storing information. Totally up to you guys if you want to just take that, right? Make sure you're citing. The challenge here really that we're trying to test is making sure that you know like your way around pointers. As far as like you implementing the actual hash function and coming up with like the math to do that, you guys can research whatever methods online you guys want. Yeah.
You cite just by using the stars, right?
Yeah, you can just, in your comment, you can just cite like, oh, taken from yada, 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 hash function, yeah. Anyone have any questions? We actually breezed through section today. I will be up here to answer questions as well. Also, as I said, office hours tonight and tomorrow. The spec this week is actually like super easy and super short to read. Like, I would suggest taking a look, just read through the entirety of it. And Zamyla actually walks you through each of the functions you need to implement. And so it's very, very clear how to do everything. Just make sure you're keeping track of pointers. This is a very challenging PSET. It's not challenging because like, oh, the concepts are so much more difficult, or you have to learn so much new syntax the way that you did with the last PSET. This PSET is difficult because there's so many pointers, and that it's very, very easy to, once you have a bug in your code, not be able to find where that bug is. And so complete and utter faith in you guys to be able to beat our misspellings. I actually haven't even written mine yet, but I'm about to write mine. So while you're writing yours, I'll be writing mine. I'm going to try to make mine faster than yours. We'll see who has the fastest one. And yeah, I will see all of you guys here on Tuesday. We'll run a kind of like a PSET workshop. All of the sections this week are PSET workshops, so you guys have lots of opportunities for help. Office hours, as always. And I really look forward to reading all of your guys' code. Yeah. I have quizzes up here if you guys want to come get those as well.